How are you? Good to see you again.
Good to see you as well. Glad you made it home safe and sound from the UK.
I did. It was a long week. I don't do very well sleeping in hotel rooms. It took me about 4 days before I got a proper night's sleep. I'm not good in sleeping in hotel beds.
No? Because the time difference. Is there a time difference between you and you?
1 hour.
1 hour? Okay.
1 hour. But yeah, it was a long week, but I enjoyed it. It was good fun. Good catching up with all the usual stuff.
Sure, we'll talk plenty about Eklund Kaci and the event itself, but tell me how it was for you. What was it like as a player, you know, your matches, the arena, the setup, all that stuff. How did you walk away from it?
I thought the setup was fine. It was very similar to the year before. They changed a couple of things. The scheduling was a lot better this year, but they had changed that at the European Open as well. The main issue for me last year was the scheduling. They tried to get all 256 players starting on the same day. Since then, they've changed it and they've gone, okay, we're playing 156. 128. Yeah, we're getting rid of them on the first day. We're getting them down. Yeah. The second day we get the other one, it's a lot easier to manage. And
So everybody played two matches on the first day.
First day.
And then two matches the second day. That did work out pretty well, I thought.
Yeah. Two matches first day, one match second day, and then one match on Thursday. It was great. The table setup was great. The 4-inch pockets, it tests you know. But you can still play proper pool. You can still, from certain angles, you can still cheat the pockets. It's all about the speed you play at. But you know, the tough tables are slippy. You know, they were quite slow as well this year. I found a lot of players were saying that the bed of the table was playing quite slow. The cushions, obviously, the rails, you expect them to grip a little bit. The balls keep spinning, and you can't get them out from the bed of the table is playing quite slow. But not nearly as slow, I've got to say, as some of the players were playing, which would be probably my only main negativity of the whole event. No, I'm just reading your message. Yes, we are.
Okay. Usually by now someone asks where Nate is, that's all. And yeah, there it is. Where's Nate?
The slow play. That was the main thing for me.
So the slow play, we can talk about slow play later when we talk about Imran and Eklund. But having a 256 player field, and you're a very good player, does that and going to 4-inch pockets, does that require them to keep matches short, like races to 9, and then there were several rounds of race to 10 instead of going right from 9 to 11, which a lot of times they've done in the past. Do you think that's based off of just, you know, the level of play of 256 players on 4-inch pockets?
In the beginning, yes, absolutely. You have the UK Open, you have a lot of dead wood, generally UK players. At the US Open, you have a lot of dead wood, generally American players. And at the European Open, you have a lot of dead wood, generally German players. So, you know, depending on how the rounds go, we did see some shocks in the beginning of the tournament. And then you do get matches that you don't expect to have. And if that's two guys that are struggling a little bit, you know, or are not of the higher level and happen to be quite slow players, you get matches north of 3 hours, which is ridiculous for a race to nine ball. Yeah. I mean, my match in the my final match was a race to 8 in the loser's side. I was 3-1 up after 15 minutes. The next 8 racks took 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
That's a tough.
How many tables were there total? Playing at one time?
26, I think.
26. So 26 shot clock keepers is a little bit tough.
I spoke to Brendan Moore, the tournament director, and they had shot clocked a couple of matches. I didn't actually see it happening. I would have asked on my match for a shot clock, but actually it was either just before my match started or during my match. It might even have been during match. I got so bored of my opponent that I started watching tables around me. You know, I just... and. Catchy was playing against Tobias Bongers, and it was 2-2, and they played for an hour. Catchy asked for a shot clock. There was a discussion about it. He was told no.
Right.
So there was no point. If Catchy's not getting a shot clock, I'm not going to get one if I start asking. Yeah. So I just let it go the way it was going. Yeah. But apparently there were some matches that were short clock.
It says a lot when Eklund Catchy asks for a shot clock.
Yes.
It says a lot.
I actually heard him. He was quite vocal about it. He said, I'm not going to stand here for 4 hours playing this match. Which is fair enough, you know, and there were quite a few matches that went over. But okay, that can happen, you know. Like you said, if there's two players that are not of the highest standard, they start to struggle with the break. You get a lot of safety battles in the beginning, the 4-inch pockets, people are missing more balls.
Right.
But there were players who don't miss much and do have a good break that I noticed some matches that slowed down quite dramatically. Yeah. And you know enough about these players to know what their speed is.
You look at the match with Eklund and Imran Majid.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, there's no way these two guys should be playing 3+ hour matches in a race tonight.
No.
So, or 10, I think it was at that point.
That's it. What do you do about it? You know, unless you have a referee at every single table with a shot clock.
Right.
A match them or not, they don't have the resources, or they don't want to give out too many all these resources for that kind of thing. And, you know, there just isn't the referees for it, you know, until more come through and more join the team.
Right.
That's what it is, you know. It's the same with the break, you know. If there was one referee per set of four tables. You know, if you're self-working, it's very easy to get away with it because you just wait until the referee's racking on another table and then you tap your balls and your opponent can say, oh, wait a minute, he's soft break. And the referee says, I'll keep an eye on it for the next one. Then he goes up the next one, he hits them hard. The referee goes, what's the problem? That kind of stuff, you know. So it's difficult, but I mean, this is all minor things. All in all, the event was fantastically run.
Yeah. There were a lot of surprises, it seemed like to me. You know, a lot of players getting through that you didn't expect to get through. I think one of the things that, you know, I don't know why it seemed more prevalent here than in other events, but, you know, top players who lost one of their first couple of matches, you know, had to come through the loser side. So when they redrew, they drew into seeded players, you know, and so... So you had, you know, some pretty juicy matchups in the round of 64, and then you'd look at other parts of the bracket, and there's two guys you didn't expect to get to the 64 anyways, and they've got two or three cushy matches ahead of them. So there were some really weird, strange brackets to me in this one, the final 64 particularly. You know, there was one bracket in the final 64 which was just brutal. And a couple more. I mean, I said when it got, I looked at the 16 player group that Big Co was in, and I told someone, I said, he's stealing in this group.
Yeah.
To reach the semifinal, stealing. And he did. So it was just, you know, and I don't think there was anything wrong with it, just the luck of the draw and the way the placements ran and, you know, a number of top players having to come through that loser's bracket, which meant they got drawn into, you know, tougher matches sometimes. So, but I thought that it was a very interesting event from that standpoint.
Yep, it was. There was, I mean, obviously I was in there every single day watching, and the atmosphere during those matches, the atmosphere at the table for Phil Wildman and Albin Ocean, when Phil, it was just incredible. And you love having those matches because everyone's in congregating around these tables, and there's just this amazing atmosphere. And of course, then you've got the live stream tables that are happening. Nobody's there because everybody like the main tables. And this is something that would be quite nice for they do it at the GB9. Whenever a match goes to Hill Hill, there's an announcement to say table 14 is Hill Hill. You know, if they could have some sort of bit, they've got large televisions in the arena. If they could have them up there, and then all of a sudden something, a red flag or something comes on the TV to say
blue light special,
Cell Hill, and then you go and look who's table 14. Oh crap, that's Albin against a nobody, basically. Right. And everybody rushes over to see it, you know. But there was a few of them. I mean, Skylar was, I mean, I hung around with Skylar basically all week, and I've never eaten so much Nando's, so much chicken. We were in Nando's, it felt like. All he eats is chicken. And so I practiced with him on the Monday. We were allowed to go in and practice beforehand, and he couldn't make a ball. He was all over the place, couldn't make a ball. And then he went into his first round match, struggled again, lost. So he had to come all the way through the loser's bracket. But he also had the opportunity, because then he plays also a loser in his first match, who was, right. was basically dead wood.
Right.
So he gave him the chance to get into stroke as he went through, and he started to play better and better and better as the two. So for, and Skyler even said himself, if I'd won that first match, I might not have got as far as I had, because I would have played less matches, getting stroke against tougher opponents. So, I mean, he benefited him because he needed to get into stroke. You know,
he got into stroke by the final 64, that's for sure.
I mean, he started to play really, really well. I mean, what he did to Sanchez Ruiz.
Yeah,
nobody's done that to Sanchez Ruiz for about 2 years, you know. So
he was
playing really, really well. And okay, you know, Kachi just managed to shut him out basically in the semi final. Had a couple of chances to maybe put him under a little bit of pressure, certainly to keep the scoreline as a match scoreline. But
yeah,
you know, Kachi proved to be the best player of the week there that week.
Yeah, he did. And there were a lot of toward the end there, you know. As opposed to last year's like U.S. Open, where everything was hill, there were a lot of blowouts late in this event.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, that's the nature of the beast. When you get players at this level, even with 4-inch packets and break rules, someone can steamroll someone else. I mean, you know, you look at Kachi taking apart Josh in the final, you know, and, you know, he also took apart Josh in the semifinal of the World 10 Ball.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's not too many people who do that to Josh in the later stages of a major tournament.
We've said that before. There's certain players that match up really well to each other, and you know, guys that you can't beat that you feel you should beat, and guys that everyone thinks you shouldn't beat. And you know, and Kachi filler. You know, we talked about Alex Pagulayan having filler's number recently.
Yeah.
You know, you have these matchups that, you know, the Skyler, for example. I think Skyler loves playing against filler. You know,
I didn't like everyone
for the semi final. He said, if you get to the final, who do you want to play? He says, 100% filler. He said, 100% filler, you know, and you would think he would go for the other guy, you know,
Well, Shane, you know, when Shane drew Kachi, you know, into that final 16, I said, I don't like Shane's chances in this match because I just don't think he, for some reason, Kachi's the type of player that he just struggles against.
Yeah,
and it happened at the World 10 Ball, and it happened again here. So Kachi, when he's going, you know, he can obviously beat anybody. So anybody can look bad against him.
Now everybody starts shouting because of the two semifinal results. And I mean, I was here the whole week. I saw all the hills. I saw all the very close matches. And then all of a sudden, the TV cameras go on, and it's just unfortunate then that there's blowout matches. Now everybody shouts for it's got to be, it can't be win or break anymore.
Oh, people just have to stay home and keep their mouth shut. But, you know, I mean, talk about a blowout, but the filler co match, that was one of the most entertaining blowouts I've ever seen. Filler played if you couldn't watch that, and just be amazed at great pool because you wanted to see it 10-9, well, then go find a different sport or something, because that was as good pool as you could watch. Even though it was one-sided, he was just incredible.
That's it. And there's too much negativity about the winner breaks, and that people should be focusing on what filler actually did.
Absolutely.
What he managed to do there was just incredible. It's probably as good a 45 minutes of nine ball as you will ever see in your life.
Yeah, 100%.
You can't do much more than that.
Well, but there are people who just, you know, they're not happy unless they can bitch about something. So
that's true. And there's, you know,
nobody's all pool fans. And they're all pool fans.
And the majority of them are pool fans, yeah. So Kachi wins it, beats filler in the final. Yeah. Got to talk about Sky, obviously. I mean,
yeah, it's a great tournament.
And looking towards the Moscow, we've kind of been waiting for this moment for a while, really, haven't we? Where does that now put Skylar in that group of possible winners of these tournaments?
you know, I've said before, you know, I love Skyler and I love watching him play. He's one of my favorite players to watch play when he's got a rhythm going and he's playing like he did at the UK Open. I need to see it more often to believe that he, you know, can he win one of these? Of course he can. Does he become, you know, a second tier favorite, you know, after those first group? I'm still waiting on, because I want to see a little more, you know, consistency in high finishes out of these. Doesn't always have to be the semifinal, but, you know, final 16, final 8, got to do that three or four times a year, or two or three times a year. And then I'll say, yeah, he's going to snap one of these off, right? It's kind of like the way you look at Mario Hee. You keep thinking he's going to snap one of these off because he does keep popping up in those final eights, final, you know. And so you know that he's got the consistency to be there. And one of these days he's going to get those rolls to get him to that last match, right? So I would love to see Skyler do that a little bit more.
Okay.
What do you think?
Skyler's one of those, you know, I mentioned it to him. I had a little bit of a go at him on the last night and told him that it irritated me that whenever he got interviewed on Sky or by Matchroom, there was always a former Indian, so you haven't really played much recently. You know, I keep saying either start playing more or just don't say that, because it sounds like you just turn up at tournaments and then, you know, you've got to be working hard, or just don't tell people that you're not. You know, don't make it obvious that you haven't touched your cue for 3 weeks, and that's why you struggled at the start of the tournament. It doesn't sound very professional, you know.
Right.
But that's just who Sky is. You know, Sky's got his family. He's got his family life, and you know, he's from where he was on Monday when I warmed up with him to where he was on Sunday.
Yeah.
In this or. Actually Saturday when he played his quarterfinal.
Right.
From what he was on the Monday to the Saturday, I've never seen two completely different players. If I'd walked in there and didn't know who Sky Woodward was, I would have said he was just another banger who just wasted $250 playing in the tournament because he wants to play against his heroes. And then on Saturday, he's playing like somebody that can, you know, take apart the world number one and possibly win the tournament, which is pretty incredible to do.
We've always known that he's got that gear. You know, it's just how often can he hit it? And that's, it goes kind of back to what I was talking about. I want to see that gear more often. And then I think he can, you know, he'd be in that discussion of someone who can win, you know, one of these events every year.
Do you think he can get there?
You know, it depends. I don't, you know, everyone's personality is different. So when he says to me, you know, he hasn't really hit a ball lately or whatever, maybe that's the way he stays sharp, is not to play too much. Right.
Yep.
You know, I don't know enough about his dedication to getting to that next level. You know, I'm not saying he doesn't have it. I don't know what it is. So I don't know, when you say, can he get that next step? I don't know, because I'm not sure what the switch is that takes you to that next
step. Yeah, so I mean, Shane said to him, Shane openly said to him, says, if you practice more, you'd be world champion. And this guy's
But that's coming from Shane, who loves practice. Doesn't practice as much anymore. But, you know, when he was at his high gear was, you know, playing like a Filipino every, you know, 7 hours every day. Sky's just not wired that way. That doesn't mean Sky can't win. I'm just trying to figure out where that, you know, what's going to trigger that move to that final step.
Okay. Another big positive for USA, Shane
Wolford. Yeah. Great tournament for him.
Making a name from, people know who he is now.
Yeah.
He was talked about last year as being a potential Moscone Cup player, but I guess a lot of people didn't really know who he was because his name hadn't really shown up in the final stages of the world tournaments for us all to see. He's there now. Great performance.
Yeah, no,
he really should have gone further.
Yeah, he should have. He had that. He was down 9-6 to Fortunski in the 16. So, you know, he did make a great comeback to come back to 9-9 and had ball in hand in the last rack, and that's all you can ask for, right? You know, there wasn't a lot of traffic on the table. It wasn't the easiest layout in the world, maybe, but it wasn't a lot of traffic. So you wanted him to get out there. But to me, more encouraging than anything was him taking out Mario He like that.
Yes.
So, you know, guys can reach certain levels of a tournament. Then you look at back at their road, you're like, well, you know, you kind of played at your level opponent-wise the whole way, right?
Yeah, we talked about some people getting easier draws and some people getting
Tough.
So, he had a tough road.
So he had a tougher road, and then when he got to Mario, I thought was, okay, this is the match to me. If you win this match, then yeah, and you go further, great. If you don't, you still, this to me was kind of a semifinal type of match for you, because it's your chance to prove that that's where you belong. And he didn't flinch. You know, I think, you know, who knows, it's a long way to the end of the year, but you know, if I'm the USA camp, and if the USA captain happens to be Jeremy again, I don't think there's any chance he's passing on the kid again this year.
I would find it very difficult to believe that he doesn't get in the team. I mean, yeah, it's not like there's 20 guys knocking on the door, you know.
But part of the problem last year was that he started off the year good and then disappeared for the last 6 months.
Right.
And so it made it easier to consider someone else. And he could do that again this year. But I still think, you know, that he's proved enough where if you're thinking about, okay, we got to go to a little bit of a youth movement, start building for the future, you can do that now without saying you're giving away this year.
No. Right. Yeah. He's pretty, yeah, I mean, he's in action all the time, apparently. He's continually.
Yeah, always.
And I spoke to Sky and Billy, and they both said the kid's got so much heart. You know, they don't see any reason why he wouldn't be able to perform on the Moscone Cup. There's no guarantee that it works that way, but they don't see a reason why he couldn't.
Right. You know? Right.
And they've been there many, many times themselves, you know, so they've got a good idea of what it takes mentally and emotionally to be able to handle that. And they have all the faith in the world in this kid to be able to do it, you know.
I think he's in a better, and this is not a knock at all, but he's in a better position right now to be a Moscone Cup rookie than I think Tyler was when Tyler was a Moscone Cup rookie.
Okay.
So then I think that, you know, he's got a, you know, he does have that temperament and that chance to get in there and win his couple of points.
Okay. So he goes in against Voskinski, gets to Hill, gets his ball in hand. What happened? I know what happened. I'm just wondering.
Well, I don't second guess shots, because I don't allow pool players to second guess what I write about. So I know he knows a lot better about what he was feeling, what he was seeing, and what he thought he could do than I do. And they don't always go right. Right.
Yeah. So I've seen a lot of stuff on social media, people trying to figure out what he did and what he shouldn't have done and why he played it the way he did. I spoke to him afterwards. He didn't like the 1-9 combo. He thought it was too thin. And he thought the one would be going towards the six and might hang over the pocket if he doesn't make the combo.
Right.
He tried to play the one and the six in at the same time. He tried to get the one to follow the six. That's why he drew back for the two, because he hadn't seen that the two went past the four into the top corner. Just a brain fart.
At that moment
in time, his head was just a bit, he had options, he had his ball in hand, and the moment kind of got the better of him, I think. So he's tried to play the follow the one in after the six, which, you know, if you've only got one pocket for the two, then that's the right shot. But actually, he did have more options for the two ball. He could have just rolled it in. And he's watched it again afterwards, and he knows that he's missed the boat there. But that's
how from what you could see, he couldn't shoot the one. He couldn't leave the one over the pocket.
Yes, but he didn't do that. He didn't do that because he thought the two only went into the left center.
Yeah.
And to get back then for the two in the left center was going to be a tough shot, you know?
Yeah.
So he figured he could make both of them at the same time, just draw back. It's an actual shot. If you're drawn back, then the ball will follow the other ball.
Yeah, right, exactly. In the pocket.
He caught the edge of it, or he caught it too thin, and it's gone on the rail, and he's blown his chance. If he had seen that the two did go into the opposite corner, then he would have just rolled the one onto the six, played position on there, and then he was probably out. But
Who knows?
So that's kind of what happened. People think he was that he butchered. They tried to leave it over the pocket, which he didn't. He tried to make the one as well. That was what happened.
It was a shame. It was a shame. But he had a great tournament. And there's a lot, you know. Again, he's another guy. Okay, I want to see. Now he's going to Spain. You know, X number of weeks later. All right, let's see how you do there.
Well, he is. He's traveling. I'm not sure if he's going to go to Spain or not.
Oh no. Okay.
I think he might not be going to Spain. I think his next one will be Fulda, but he's prepared to travel. He wants to get those points. He desperately wants to be on the Moscone Cup team. He thinks he should have been on last year. He truly believes that, but he wants on this year, and he's
I think
he's a great addition. I think he's a great addition to the team, to be fair.
And I like that he's going after the points to get on and not leaving it up to, you know, a pick.
No, right? Correct. So, and
what you want to see out of pick players.
And the way he's going at the moment, then he probably will be the in the top three. I mean, if he's going to go, I mean, I think Tyler will go to all the events as well. He's been traveling kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it looks like Oscar's not going to be traveling anymore. Or he certainly wasn't at the UK Open. So whether or not he does or not remains to be seen. So it looks like those four guys are going to be the USA guys that are battling for points. Shane's not really battling with anybody for points, but you know.
It doesn't look like Sky's going to be bailing for points either.
Not now. It'll be interesting to see if they continue, if the likes of Sky and Shane, if they continue to travel, if they don't need the points anymore, you know?
Right.
Okay, obviously going to the Spanish Open, that's connected to the World Cup of Pool, which is happening directly afterwards. So Shane and Sky will be there, you know? But do they go to Fulda? I mean, it's for the guys going from the States. You need to get kind of last 16 quarterfinal to break even financially. Yeah. If you've already got the points in the bag, if your spot is already in, then do you bother doing that? I don't know.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see if they do.
And they're going to announce those players after. There's like three different events that they're announcing.
Yes, the Moscone. I heard from
Spain.
The Moscone Cup. Well, no, the first picks, the players who are number one on the European and the European ranking after Fulda will be selected, and then after the players who are the top ones, other than the two that have already been picked, the next top ones after the US Open, they will be in the team,
and then include the Asian
Open, and then the Asian Open will be the final cutoff.
It's interesting because it's kind of like. Well, yeah, putting a gun to the American and European heads to go to Asia. Yeah. Otherwise, if that wasn't a meaningful event, you know, for one or two of the guys, whatever, they're just not going.
But it's also nice now that it doesn't all come down to one event. We how many years have we said, okay, we're going to the International Open, and it's all on the International Open. Who's going to get in the team? Now, you know,
it's still up to the last tournament for the last spot. You know, which international was the same thing too. I mean, you already knew who one and two were. It just, you know, was something.
Yeah, it makes it exciting. It gives each event and the excitement of we're going to find out. We're going to find out a Moscone Cup pick at the end of this one.
It's marketing.
Yeah, but what also could happen is you could qualify as number one at the European Open. Right. But it could only be a very small amount between you could be
out of the top three by the last one.
By the last one, you could be number four in the ranking. But you already got your spot, you know.
Well, that's fair.
Yeah,
so again, it's all part of the marketing plan, you know.
Yeah, like, so at the end of the Asian Open, there could be somebody who's sitting in number two on the ranking, but he's not in the Moscone Cup.
Yeah, yeah, but I guess it's possible.
Yeah, small margins, eh? But does that put Kachi in Moscone Cup? Do you think?
Oh, God. Well, he's number two in points now.
Yeah.
And the way he's playing, you can't imagine this is going to be the last Final Four that he's going to be in. I mean, he's playing as well as, you know, if you watched him in the World 10 Ball and you watched him in the Whirlpool Masters and you watched him here, you're like, this guy's – because last year was not his greatest year. He had a couple high finishes, but didn't win a tournament last year. This year, he looks – really unstoppable. So I think that, you know, and he's focused on making Moscone Cup by points. So I think that it's going to be really tough to keep him off the team. You look at the European rankings now, I think, you know, Josh is number six, right?
Yeah, okay, but...
yeah, no, but you know, yeah. the more, when you have someone like Josh, who's, if someone like Josh doesn't make it on points, there's a lot more pressure on who you, you know, who you pick as the wild cards, because that means someone that you weren't expecting is going to make it on points, whether it's Kachi, whether it's Mario He, whether it's something like that.
Yeah, okay,
so the pressure on the wild card picks becomes, you know, even greater. If you had the wild card.
I mean, obviously any European coach would like to have Filler qualifying directly.
Yeah, of course.
So you don't have to waste a wild card. You would like to have Jason qualifying directly so you don't have to waste a wild card. You know, because those are the two guys that you would say, if they don't qualify, they're probably going to be getting their wild card picks, you know? So you'd rather not waste them on those two guys.
Right. But there's, you know, the more these, like, surprise guys who qualify automatically, the more...
Who would really be a surprise? You would see Mario as being a surprise if he ended in the top three?
Anybody who's a first-timer is a surprise.
Yeah, but that's different.
Do I think it's be a surprise if Mario He was one of the top three point getters? No, Mario He's.
Well, that's what I mean. That gets you Moscone Cup. So it would be no surprise for Mario He to end up as one of the top three ranked players on the ranking.
Right.
So then he's in. Do you really care?
Then he's in, you're not a rookie. He was close last year and, you know, they didn't get him a wild card pick. Lechner was close last year, didn't get him a wild card pick. Why? Because they're first timers.
Yes,
you know, like, you don't pick rookies with your wild card picks, things like that. So the more of those guys like a Mario or a Max who get the automatic points, the more that puts the players that you think are lock cinches, all of a sudden there's three of them for two spots or four of them for two spots or something like that. And then things get a little bit dicier, and then European fans start to fret because, you know, rookies are playing in the Moscone Cup, God forbid.
Look, they had one last year. They had a rookie last year.
Yeah, yeah.
They had a rookie last year. But okay, America don't really have to worry about those issues. It's just Europe that has to worry about that, I guess.
Well, yeah, America doesn't have to worry because it's a two-player country.
Yeah, but there is still a third spot there, and I'm surprised there's not more players that are shooting for it, you know?
Oh, there are. It's just, you know, you've got to reach certain points in tournaments to get points enough to, you know, you've got to, and I said this after last year, what I wanted going into this year to see out of Team USA hopefuls is that the points battle for 3-4 and, you know, for that third spot is a higher level than it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So points battle last year for third spot was, you know, who's going to get in? The guy with 9,000, the guy with 8,000, or the guy with 7,000? At that point, I don't care.
Yeah.
Because none of them have really done all that much this year. So I want to see the fight for third place be 20,000, 22,000, 24,000, because that means that two or three guys did well in a number of events, right? So then I'm more comfortable with it. So that's what I'm looking for more than a particular person. That's what I'm looking for this year out of Team USA.
Okay. So you watched it at home, I guess, the UK Open. You watched how did it come across as a production on TV?
It was very good. Yeah, I thought the production was great. I kept getting texts asking if my DAZN is going down or whatever, but you know, it was fine. I watched pretty much the entire thing here sitting in my office, and it was great. And the production was good. Announcing was great. We'll stay away from the announcing in the final match.
Not mention that he's on 10 more champion.
Well, I've said it before, and Kachi even said, listen, I understand you're marketing nine ball. I understand it. But please don't make it sound like this is going to be the biggest title of my career and I've never won a major. And I understand it. So how do they tell a Michael McMullen or whoever, Carol, how do you give the guy his due and not, you know, be unloyal to your brand. So there's got to be a way to do it, right?
Well, because there is. I think they've done it in the majority. I didn't hear the commentary because to be honest, there was sometimes I could hear the commentary too well from sitting table side. They were very, very loud. What Michael Mullen, the commentator, you could hear him. There was a couple of players.
Right, I heard a couple of players mention that.
Players got shot, you know, so maybe they need to get a Perspex box around the commentators, I think, for the next one. But I haven't heard what was actually said. I've heard about it, but certainly in the matchroom posts, they've made it very clear in the matchroom posts, the first major matchroom title.
That's not what they were saying. If they kept saying that, I mean, they kind of danced around that a couple times, but there were many instances on which it was just said, you know, his first major title or his biggest title. This will be his biggest title. Not his biggest title.
Okay.
Or his biggest nine ball title or whatever they want to say. It's not the end of the world. And it was just something almost fun to kind of poke at and say, you know, there's a bigger world out here, guys. So, I too understand the marketing thing and how much time and effort and money they've put into developing the brand that they're selling. And I'm all for it. But there's got to be a way to respect the players.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think, like you said, it's nine ball. That's all they care about is nine. I used the word irrelevant last year when we were talking about Moscone Cup picks and what everything that Federer had achieved and stuff like that. And I said, as far as one pocket banks, everything else, it's 10 ball. It's irrelevant. They only want to look at nine ball. They only care about nine ball. They only want people watching on TV only to know about nine ball. They don't want them knowing about other games. Right. If by watching nine ball in the matchroom events makes a new fan say, I'm going to go around to the pool hall, and then they see somebody playing 10 ball and go, what are you playing? Oh, this is 10 ball. Oh, okay.
Again, I get all that, and that's fine. They should market it that way.
Emily said it straight to my face. She said, Jim, as far as I'm concerned, there's only one world champion.
And that's...
Because it's nine ball.
And that's her statement on her brand and what they're selling. And I get that.
Yeah.
But if I'm Eklund Kacchi, I feel like, well, wait a second here. You know, I've got other accolades. I'm not a first timer. I'm not, you know, this isn't the biggest, you know, thank you for the $30,000, but it's not the biggest title of my career. It's not, you know, can he say that? Will he say that in interviews later? Yes. Has he said it in interviews later? Yes. So now it kind of looks like, wait a second, what are, you know, now you get confusion where it doesn't need to be confusion or, you know, people picking sides where they shouldn't have to pick sides, whatever. It's a big world. We can all have our titles and still have our tour. You know, it's not rocket science, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think it's such a big deal either, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think it's, like you said, it's just something for people to pick at. I mean,
but it was one of those things that was painfully obvious.
If Matchroom only have to add a couple of words for everybody to be happy with it and just say Matchroom title, then fine. But they don't have to sit there and list all the 10 ball achievements or
no. You can say his first world nine ball tour major.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, good. I can live with that.
I think some people.
But don't attach his career. Don't attach his career to what you're selling.
No, I think some people
attach the title to what you're selling. That's fine.
Yeah. Some people on Facebook are expecting the announcers in Matchroom to list the 10 ball titles. The one. They're not going to do that, people. They're only going to
don't hold your breath.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So it came across really well on the TV.
Yeah, it was great.
There was a decent crowd in there, a decent public for the finals.
Yeah, I mean it's again one of these things where I hope that they stay in the same place all the time, you know, with this event. Say, because I thought that's a really cool arena, and come the day that they can pack that place up, it would be really cool.
The only negative that I have there with that arena is if it does pack, there is nowhere else for people to go. So you are in the arena. You know, what they have in Fulda is you have the arena and you have another room, a large room beside the arena where the vendors are and a nice big bar where people can actually go and say, I've just watched the match. I want to watch. I want to go out there. I'm going to have a couple of beers and I'm going to chat with my friends about what I've just seen. You know, you're there with a group of your mates and you've watched your friend play, and you go out there and you can be just a little bit louder and talk normally and just have a social moment of, there isn't that at the Copper Box Arena. There's nowhere else to go. You're there or you're outside. That's
Really?
You know? Interesting. So, That would be for me, you know. Yes, if they filled out,
it's a good point. Obviously,
they need somewhere else to be able to go, because they're not just going to sit there for 6 hours watching pool.
As a TV viewer, looking at that screen and seeing the two tiers and all the different color seats, see them all filled would be
amazing.
Would be imposing. It would be, you know, I love the thing that there's a second level, you know, instead of just one long sweeping, you know, so. I just thought that it made for the potential of a really cool look, and so that's why I like to see them stay in. Yeah, that's why I like to see them stay in certain cities like the U.S. Open and in Atlantic City, start to develop a following and start to develop. It may take a few years, but when you move these events every year, it's, you know, throwing spaghetti at the wall to see if it sticks in terms of whether you're going to get a crowd that's going to make TV look good. You know, I keep talking about
That would be the only thing for me. They could do with a second room, a more of a kind of relaxing room or a social room with a proper big bar or whatever, and where all the vendors can be as well, because there's no real room for the vendors. Onboard Sports were there, but they were they're stuck in a corner. The only place they could be, really, it's not like they were stuck in a corner. That was the only available area for them at the door as you first came in. Yeah, you couldn't really get proper food. You would have to go out around the corner and stuff like that. So people get hungry to leave the arena. You don't want them leaving. You want them to be in there.
Even
if it's just the other side of the door, you know, where they can just come back through, you want to keep them in the venue. You want to keep them around, you know.
Well, they certainly do. I mean, they talk about trying to – they always make the analogy of trying to get darts crowds, you know, to pull things. Well, darts people, they have their own tables. They don't get up for a week.
No, exactly. And somebody comes around and just keeps filling their beer up for them.
God bless them. I may switch to darts.
Yeah. Well, congratulations again to Kachi. Great event. Run. Well done. Be interesting to see how he gets on at the Spanish Open, whether he can keep this run going. Final, the World Pool Master snaps off his first major Matchroom title.
his first World Nine Ball Tour major.
Congratulations, Tim. And shall we move on to the World Cup of Pool?
Sure.
The teams have been announced.
Yeah.
We know our 32 teams. The last spot in Team GB, I think, was the last thing to be announced, which will have caused some comments on Facebook.
What did you think?
Some people happy with it, some people not happy with it.
What did you think? Who did you think it should have been?
Who it should have been?
Yep.
Listen,
you didn't like my Gary Wilson suggestion, huh?
No, Gary Wilson, no, no person to prepare. Listen, I they all had pros and cons. In my opinion, it would have been a very, very difficult decision for me to make. It would have been easy just to duck and say, I'm just going to take the one that's highest on the rankings. That would have been a duck, in my opinion.
Who would that have been?
That would have probably, I think that would have been Imran, possibly.
Oh, Imran?
I think it was possibly Imran. No, Chris. It would have been Chris after the UK Open. Yeah. But I think, you know, Elliot, he earned it by right. In case anyone hasn't heard, Elliot Sanderson will be playing with Jason Shaw of Team GB. Elliot earned it by right last year and got one shot. And I know how excited Jason was at the idea of playing with Elliot. You know, he thinks the two of them match up well together. They play at the same kind of pace. They have the same kind of game. Very importantly, they're both lefties. So that's one thing that Jason, I know for a fact, Jason doesn't like thinking about while he's playing doubles. That's why he likes playing with Filler. You know,
so he gave him a mulligan?
No, maybe, you could say that. He's played with Chris a number of times and they've never really gelled. They've not done as well as they should do considering how good the two of them are. Imran has been there before as well, and I think he doesn't know. Elliot might Doggett is Elliot might dog it. Elliot might have an absolute nightmare, but he just doesn't know. And until he knows, he's going to give the kid another chance, you know? And I think he enjoys the way Elliot plays the game. He knows that Elliot will listen to him if he tells him to play a certain shot. Elliot's going to do exactly what he's told. And he likes the energy that the kid has. And, you know, Chris has had his, a couple of years trying it with Jason. Didn't work out, as we said.
Right.
Nobody really knows why. There's certain theories behind that. Do they try and outshoot each other on the table? Is it two big egos? You know, you look at the successful teams in the past. You know, you look at Filler winning his World Cup of Pool with Christoph Rangers. Christoph just did whatever Filler said. And he did everything he had to do to keep them at the table. And he just took a back seat and let Filler decide how it would be played. And that worked out perfectly for them. Chris and Jay, neither of them are going to do that, you know. And maybe they do try and outshoot each other. I don't know, speculation. But Elliot's getting another shot at it, and I can kind of understand.
Glad to see, you know, a young guy like that in there and take another shot and see if he gets a little more table time this time.
Yeah, that's it. I think that's the main one. He went there and just didn't get a shot. We still don't know. Don't be surprised if Elliot has maybe a little bit more, or if Elliot gets on the stream table at the Spanish Open, just to get a bit more of a feel for the arena. That wouldn't surprise me if that happens.
it sounds like the fix is in.
No, not that it's the fix, but...
Out of their way to put him on a TV table because...
No, not they're going out of their way to put him on, but he is the surprise pick. He's the one that people are now talking about. So people want to know who this kid is, you know? So it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up out there, you know, on one of the streams. We don't know. I'll be interested to see. I like Elliot a lot. I'm delighted for him. Yeah. Feel bad for Chris and for Imran, obviously, but two of them... Actually, the one that probably wouldn't have been as upset as the other ones probably would have been Elliot. I don't think he really expected to get in after his performance at the UK Open. He just didn't perform there. Whether the pressure was on him because he knew that the decision was going to get made.
I still like my Gary Wilson pick, I'm telling you.
No, that would have been probably suicidal. That would have been full suicide.
Here's the reason I thought it was actually kind of interesting. Because he's one of the world's best cueists, right? So he doesn't know the game. Big deal. Now he's not playing an opponent. He's got a coach with him for every shot that he takes. Here's how you play this. You don't think Gary Wilson can follow that, can say, okay, and execute it because he's that good with a cue? So I just think that the idea of having a coach with you to tell you how to shoot every shot would make him really dangerous.
Well, of course, these snooker players are not going to miss many pots, but... Let's not start saying that snooker players can now play pool. Just because one guy got to the last six. Jack Wazowski got bumped. You know, Judd Trump went over and tried it. So one guy had a decent run. You talked about people's draws opening up. Who did Gary Wilson beat to get to how far he got?
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I'm just saying that a lot of what I saw Gary Wilson, you know, end up losing and missing by was not knowing what to do. Because he can make a ball, right? Mm-hmm. So if you take that element of not knowing what to do away by having Jason saying, I'll tell you what you do. This is exactly what you got to do.
Yeah, okay, but then, you still have to execute as well.
Yeah, right. And execution is not a problem for someone
well, who cues as well. Well, yeah, you know, I don't know. They still, if they're having to play with extreme English, you can see
them
hitting diamonds, you know, not just rattling balls. You know,
I just thought it was interesting.
I think it would have been. I think that would have got a massive backlash from the pool community. I think if based on just on that tour,
the British pool community, you know,
they need
something to justify having a backlash about.
Well, let's have a look. I want to have a quick look at it. There's a couple of absentees that I want to talk about.
Okay.
Dennis Grabe. I'm surprised that, was it not Slovakia who got to the semi-final last year?
You're right. Was it last year or 2 years ago?
Last year or two, they're not there. Estonia, Dennis Graber, semi-final right. last year, 2 years ago. Not there. You know? Yeah. Now, okay, the selections were based on the first 16 countries in the ranking. So Jason Shaw is then, that he gets the British spot, you know, and Shane gets the American spot, blah, blah. So the first 16 individual countries through the ranking, and then, no, sorry, the first 15, and then Spain as the host nation gets a second.
It's the second team, correct.
Yeah.
So you're taking Estonia and Slovakia out of last year, say.
Well, it just means that they didn't have a player in the top 15. So Dennis Graber
right. is. But then they didn't. Then they didn't get a pick.
They didn't get a wild card.
They didn't get a wild card. So, did they get replaced by two Asian teams, or did as far as total numbers of countries represented last year to this year, are there more Asian teams this year than European teams were last year? You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm not sure. So, was there even 32 teams last year? Was it not? There was only 24 teams last year. Now there's 32. So they've actually extended the field.
Now you're asking me to go into my memory. So, you have to find room for Burma.
But is Burma in there?
Yes. My mind.
Is that phone we Chow and Thao? Sim,
yes, phone me later. Phone me later.
Phone me later and
Thaw right now.
So Burma have a team. I mean, it's great. I love that this has become worldwide and there's teams all over the world. But I mean, Mika Immonen and Petri Mäkinen for Finland, they got a wild card. Aloysius Yap, how he's not in the top 15 players in the world, I have no idea. Playing with the guy that beat me that took 3 hours and over every shot, Shariq Syed.
Shariq Syed.
Yeah.
A Mark Wilson disciple.
Is it? Okay. I don't understand why it takes so long.
He spent 4 years at Lindenwood when Mark was.
He doesn't miss much. Australia and New Zealand both get teams. Team Italy, that's an interesting one. Francesco Candela, who's been doing well recently. And got to the last 16 at the.
Surprised that they did Australia and New Zealand.
Why?
They haven't really. Neither team has really done much there, and it always seems like unfair almost to bring two teams that far to go home after one day.
Assuming they lose, yeah. But if the players are willing to do it.
I assume that
every single player that I'm looking at on my telephone, we see them there, the whole list of the teams. I'm assuming every single one of these guys will be at the Spanish Open. You would imagine,
yeah.
I mean, certainly if you're traveling all that way, you're going to take a second tournament as well, you know. So I'll just go through them. Spain, obviously.
Spain B is a cool team.
Sorry?
Spain B is a cool team.
Yes, also very
Delgado and Jonas. That's a pretty cool little second team.
But you know who's not seeded? James Aranis and Joel Antua.
Well, not you know seeded. What? You've got to earn your seed, and the Philippines just hasn't done it in the past year. Come on,
can you imagine if you're in that top seedings and you get drawn out against those two? They have the highest combined Fargo of any team.
Do they?
Yeah, crazy. I think they're both on like 822 or something like that.
Really?
Yeah,
They're higher than Sky and Shane or Victor and Conrad, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. If it was seeded based on total Fargo points, they'd be the number one seeds.
Wow. Yeah. That's impressive.
So, well, obviously, Skylar and Shane, how do you think they're going to get on?
You know, it's the World Cup pool. You never know. You know, they're short races and who knows where you get a chance at the table. I mean, they're, you know, Shane's got to love, you know, having watched Sky and at the UK Open. Got to like his chances right now. I mean, he's obviously played well, and he's such a good player in that type of Moscone-ish kind of format, Skyler is. So, they've got to be one of your betting favorites, I would think.
Okay.
Top four or five, right?
And the betting odds, I haven't actually seen the betting odds, but
what would you imagine?
I would place them, depending on how the draw goes, depending on where the Philippines fit into all the draw, because I think the Philippines are the ones that's going to mess up the whole seeding system here. I don't see, you never know, like you say, it's a short race, but they're all hoping they avoid the Philippines in their quarter of the draw, shall we say. I see Shane and Sky as potential semi-finalists at best, yeah. I think. Yeah. You know? But again, you know, Filler's in there and he's got a new partner again. Moritz. The young guy, Moritz Neuhausen. Fantastic player, but you know, we don't know how he's going to do it. If you're going to go out there for the first time and you get to pick your own partner, you'd probably pick Filler, wouldn't you? I mean, you
would, but it's intimidating.
It's intimidating. Yeah, but Filler's always seems to have, he handled it very well, I thought, with, like we talked about Christoph Rinches. Yeah. I think he handled it very well. He seemed to keep him at ease. He wasn't getting overly kind of, he seemed to keep his emotions more under control than he does playing on his own, you know? Wasn't as hype or wasn't as jumpy and wasn't as Josh as what we've seen him playing on his own, you know?
Yeah.
Which is maybe what he needs to do for Moritz as well. Right. Alban and Mario, Alban and Mario are going to be dangerous anytime they play together, I guess.
Yeah. You got Syria in there this year.
Syria. They managed to find another Syrian there, which is, I think, is going to be the main challenge after Sufi got to the.
You talk about where the Slovakians went and things like that. Well, you know, you've got to find room for Assyria now because Sophie's a hot ticket. So someone's got to go, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, Slovakia did great previously, but you're not talking about name players. So you can replace that country and be okay. We haven't talked about China, the return of Xiaxing Wu.
Oh, God, I've missed that. Oh, yeah. Wu Xiaxing and Wang Kang.
Yeah.
You don't want them, really.
What's that?
You don't want that.
Well, Wang Kang, yeah. I'm glad to see Wu back in events playing. I've always loved watching him play. And, you know, unfortunately, you can count the number of times you got to see him play in the last 3 years or 4 years on half a hand. Yeah. So I'm excited to see him out there playing again. Excited to see China back in action with you know, teams. That's going to be exciting.
Yeah, you never really, I mean, we really have missed a lot of these big players coming to the events. It's been awful. I mean, if you're going to win a world title or if you're going to win a massive tournament or whatever, you want them all to have been there. You know, you don't want it hanging over or a little asterisk saying, yeah, without China or without Asia. Yeah. Without.
Well, it's got me really looking forward to the Asian Open because you talk about filling up 256 player fields with dead wood. No dead wood in Asia. There's no dead wood in Asia, man. It's going to be, so you better buckle up and have your A game going because, you know, you're going to be out in a rush there.
I'm really looking forward to that because the likelihood is we're going to hear several names that we've never heard of before.
Yes.
We'll
have no chance to pronounce them either.
Yeah, that are absolute killers. They're not going to come through. And it's, you know, we talk about the talent that's coming through in Europe and the new generation of players. In Asia, it puts us to shame. I mean, they've just got hundreds of absolute killers.
I'm so glad that there's a major tournament in Asia because it's, you know, that's just, you know, it brings everything up to a higher level of realization of, wow, these cats can play.
Yeah. Who else have we got in here? I mean, the rest of them is, the Coe brothers, they'll be dangerous because Chung played really. Chung played really, really well at the UK Open. I mean, the way he played against
They both played very well this year overall. They've both played very well in all events this year. We didn't come too far away from seeing them play each other in the final.
Nope.
So they're both playing really well. Yeah.
Yeah. If the two of them are in stroke playing well, then they're very, very, very dangerous, very capable. Have they ever, just curious, do you remember them ever really playing each other in a big final or big semi-final? Did they not play
in Las Vegas? in Las Vegas and some of the old US Open 10 ball, US Open 8 ball deals, they played each other. Yeah, I think they both won one event and beat the other, and the other won the second event and beat the other. You know, they were both finalists then. Smaller fields, but decent prize money, good fields.
Okay. On a personal note, Neil's fine and Mark Bijsterbosch again. There no surprises there that's the team. That's for me is all dependent on. I mean, Neil's is playing well at the moment. He got, you know, he should really have beaten Chris there. He kind of it was a very un-Neil's shot that he missed that eight ball at Hill Hill.
Yeah,
he's been playing real well. So it's all going to be for me. That's all going to be about how Mark plays. I think Neil's is in good form at the moment.
South Korea back in the picture.
Kang Lee and his partner.
Well, she played in the PLP.
Yep,
So she'll be back on the Matchroom stage. Good to see a woman in the field.
Yep. Robbie Capito and Lo Ho Sum. That's a strong combination for Hong Kong.
It's a very good combination.
God, there's some deadly teams in the lower, the unseeded
portion. Yeah,
you might as well just throw them all together and just make a random draw, because there's some crazy ones. Who else? Big names here.
Yes, Poland, obviously Victor and Conrad.
Victor and Conrad are always going to be strong. Yeah. They're good friends as well, so. Nuki always got his usual partner that he has every year. Mora and Pagulain.
Yeah. I was hoping to see, someone mentioned it, Matt mentioned it, I was hoping to see Riku on, you know, Team Finland.
Yes. I mean, he can't be far off the rankings. So I'm assuming that Mika is still above him in the rankings, but where does that come from?
Was Petri your automatic pick for number two? Did it have to be? No, I think you could have put Riku in there for sure.
There may well have been a little nudge in that direction from Matchroom, you know or no, but I think is it too early?
Matchroom's they're opportunists when it comes to getting the flavor of the day in there.
I'm still wondering how Mika is Finland number one on the ranking. How many events has he played? How many points did he get by doing it? I mean,
that's a good question. I don't know where he is. And let's.
Oh no! I think your wild cards don't have anything to do with the ranking. It's just two players. The ranking only has effect.
Yeah, you're right.
So Team Finland has just been chosen as those two.
Right. So I thought I'm kind of surprised because, like I said, Matchroom is opportunist when it comes to, TV time. And, maybe this team was decided before the UK Open.
A lot of these were already announced beforehand.
Yeah. So, if they'd waited until after the UK Open, I would have been really surprised if you wouldn't have seen the kid in there.
I think the last player that was announced was actually Elliot.
Just yesterday, I think. Yeah, and Jani Juuski, he's Finland's number one. So,
Of course. Yeah, he's going to feel a little bit disappointed not to be in the team.
So, if you're looking for, a little rating shot and a possibility of, a cool team kind of making waves, Jani and Riku would have been a really cool team.
Yeah, Mika and Riku. Then you've got the Mika part of it as well, everybody wants to see Mika playing as well. But okay, Kachi, the man of the moment, he's got a good partner.
Very, very familiar with each other. He likes playing with them. They're comfortable together. He said that they have kind of similar styles of play. Although Besser obviously doesn't break like Eklund, he's comfortable with that choice for sure.
So who's your pick? Give me your one if you had to bet on somebody, and the one that you think might be the
sleeper.
Yeah.
If I had to bet on someone, I'm going to go Coe Brothers. And if I like a sleeper, I mean, none of them are sleepers, but I'll go Spain B.
Wow. Wow.
What the hell? You got to roll the dice. I mean, it's not like we're actually
I would call that a sleeper. I would call that a sleeper. You said it's not.
Yeah, that's a sleeper. Yeah, that's a sleeper. Yeah. A non-sleeper would have been like, you know, Poland or U.S.
Yeah. Right. I'm going to go. You took the Coe Brothers, so I'm not going to. Right. Then I'm going to go for Philippines.
Yeah.
Which would be no massive surprise, to be honest. And my sleeper, Hong Kong.
Hong Kong? That's, yeah. All right. So we'll have a sleeper bet. Whose sleeper goes further?
Yeah, the last longer sleeper bet.
Yep.
That seems about fair. Yeah. All right, then. Watch them get drawn against each other in the first round.
Yeah, there we go. That'd be perfect. Yeah.
All right, Mike. Anything else we want to talk about? Anything else you
want
to talk
about? No, my lights have gone out, so now people get a better look at what, you know, they don't have to see my whole face. That was good. It was good stuff.
I think we covered pretty much everyone. We tried to stay away from all the confrontational stuff that everybody's been moaning about recently because we try and keep it positive, I think.
Yeah, like Carl Boy's chiming in on Mantrum 13 ball. He's on this big 13 ball rage. So. Yeah, someone's got to talk to that boy.
I'll have a word with him. It's all right. You'll listen to me. All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in.
Yeah, thanks. And, it was fun.
We'll be back on again, I guess, sometime next week, preparation for the Spanish Open and for the World Cup of Pool. And
Are you playing the Spanish Open?
No, I won't be going to the Spanish Open. My next event will be Fulda for the European Open.
Oh, okay.
I'm missing the Spanish. Got to work.
Food's going to be better. Food's going to be better at the Spanish Open, Jim.
Yeah, no, but I've got to work sometime because I don't earn any money playing pool. I'm going to do my real job. I'm just a fan, mate. I'm just a fan. Thanks to all our Patreons. I don't actually have a list in front of me because Nate's not here, but we appreciate you. Thank you for everything you do. Thanks to all the sponsors of the podcast, to Jacoby, to everybody else. Again, I'm going to push Nate to push that because I don't actually know who they all are. And thanks for joining in. We'll be back next week. Cheers, Mike.
Cheers.
See ya.